Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, hello everyone and welcome to the show. This is show number 85 from Engage for Success. I'm Jo Moffat and your host for this afternoon. MD and founder of the creative communications consultancy Woodread, and I'm a member of the Guru Group of Engage for Success and also part-time host of the Engage for Success blog talk radio show. So welcome to our listeners. If you haven't heard of Woodread and aren't familiar with what we do, a little bit of an intro first of all. We work with leading blue-chip clients as well as many not-for-profit and public sector organisations to help them use their brands as tools to drive employee engagement. So for me and the rest of the team here at Woodread, the brand on the inside is just as important as it is to marketing teams on the outside. I'm very pleased to have as our special guest today Katie McCauley. Katie is Managing Director of AB, an agency who have been working in the employee communications field for over 50 years now. And I've been talking with Katie about her recently published book, which went on sale at the beginning of September, and she's joining us today to talk more about that. It's called From Cascade to Conversation, and essentially the book looks at how organizations need to rethink how they communicate with their employees. So, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jo. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. So, before we get into talking specifically about the book, which is now just over 4 weeks on sale, can we just talk very briefly about you? What's your background, Katie? I mean, you were saying AB as an agency has been around 50 years, but you've not been with AB for all of that time, I guess.
Not quite. No, haven't quite got to my 50th anniversary yet, but. But nevertheless, yes, I have been working in employee communications in one form or another for over 20 years now. Although I guess possibly like a few other people, it's not what I set out to do initially. I was very attracted to journalism. But after a brief spell with a national newspaper and a women's magazine, I kind of accidentally fell into internal communications but immediately loved it. I was fascinated, and I still am, by business and by what communications can achieve and what we all can achieve when we communicate with each other effectively inside organisations. I've worked on both sides of the fence, I suppose, in that time. So I've worked inside some fairly corporate cultures, I guess you'd say, with PwC and the London Stock Exchange, Barclays. Now, as running AB, I think I can honestly say I've got my dream job. I think we're the longest established employee comms agency in the UK, but no doubt someone will tweet me and tell me otherwise. But
if they've got that wrong, I'm sure someone will be quickly let us know.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. Good. So, as you say, both sides of the fence you've experienced, and now working in what you call your dream role. So, what prompted the book then? Where did that come from?
To be honest, it all came from a conversation, ironically enough. We were sitting in a room. We have a very collaborative culture at AB. We do love a brainstorm. And probably nearly 2 years ago, we were sitting thinking about how to mark this 50th anniversary. And some of the guys thought it might be fun to produce a sort of commemorative book, a kind of retrospective of how communications have changed since the 1960s and the 1970s. And that all seemed quite good fun and it might be quite amusing. But then the conversation shifted and we realized that actually there were some very important, almost seismic shifts happening in communications, both inside work and outside work. And we ought to think about the future and not the past. And the book ought to be rooted in the big question, which is really where's next for internal communications. So I think that was really the genesis of how it all started just over a year ago now.
Yes. So, looking back is all fine and dandy, and we need to know kind of where we've come from. But actually, it's more important to sort of think where do we need to go and how we're going to get there, really. So
absolutely
interesting. So
yes,
you were saying it was it all came out of a brainstorm a couple of years ago. And when did you actually start putting pen to paper, so to speak?
I probably began writing it just over a year ago. I have to be honest, actually, the process of writing the book was a lesson in itself, I think, about the power of conversation and collaboration. First of all, I leant quite heavily on my colleagues at AB, particularly Ben Hall and Eloise Hines. Together, I think we read all the management greats, stretching right back to kind of Abe Maslow and Peter Droycker and people like that. So we did a bit of the theory work and the research to make sure it was grounded in that. But there's an old joke, isn't there, that consultants are people that see something working in practice and then wonder whether it will work in theory. And we didn't want just to theorize and pontificate, if you like. So we lined up a series of interviews with people that are working today inside all kinds of different organizations on this shift from cascading or broadcasting messages to conversing. We spoke to Richard Mullander, who's an ex-hostage negotiator, who spoke really intriguingly about the power of listening. Richard Dennison, who set up the first intranet at BT. The queen of measurement that people might have heard of, called Angela Senecas in the US. Neil Jenkins, who runs ICD at Coca-Cola. Pierre Gold at HSBC. Jackie Connor at Sainsbury's. So that's just a small sample. We spoke to a real diverse range of very passionate people working inside comms, you know, working with communications today inside some really interesting organisations.
Yeah. Interesting. We've had Jackie Connor on this show, actually, as a guest. She was on, probably just over a year ago now, she was on talking about the role of Sainsbury's sponsorship of the Paralympics, and how they use that as a tool, an ongoing tool for employee engagement over a couple of years. So, yeah, she's a very passionate lady about the whole topic, isn't she?
She's wonderful. Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So it's been a long process then.
It has been a long process, but fascinating. I was stunned by how people opened up to me. They didn't know me when I approached them. But people have been very open and very honest, and I feel the whole process has put me in a really privileged position to find out what people are thinking and feeling about communications today inside their organisations.
Yes, yeah, interesting. And who is the book primarily aimed at, Katie?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because as I was sitting down to write it, I did have someone in mind, and I imagined somebody working in employee communication, someone who's responsible for kind of crafting messages and sending out messages today, who feels that they haven't quite made it yet, that there's something they'd still like to do in terms of innovation, that they're interested in trying something new. So, yes, someone who was seeking a little bit of inspiration, I suppose. This isn't a manual. So it's not a how-to guide. You wouldn't pick it up because you wanted a step-by-step plan of how to write your comm strategy. So it's aimed at people who are seeking to learn about how others might be doing it in order to bring about maybe change and try something different inside their organization. And I guess also leaders too, not just senior leaders, but also people at the front line who are looking after communications for the people sort of delivering the products and services to customers too. So it's quite a broad audience, if I was honest, I think.
Okay. So I think the book, as I understand it, the book's very much looking ahead. We've already touched on that. So, and again, from conversations we've had before, I understand that it examines and explores what the shift from cascade type of communications to conversation means for employee communications professionals.
Yes.
It's got implications for the kind of content we write, the kind of channels that we build and use, how we measure stuff, and you talked about measurement, and the skills that those practitioners you're targeting, and as well as those leaders, might be needing. So can we perhaps explore some of those things in a bit more detail? What does this shift from cascade to conversation really mean for the profession in your view, Katie? What are the kind of key themes that you've explored in the book?
I suppose if I could sum it up in one phrase, it would be less telling and more asking. And what I mean by that is, historically, I think we've been very good at crafting and disseminating messages. And we have more recently sparked interesting conversation around those messages. But essentially, the agenda has been set by us on behalf of our leadership teams. And I think, in all honesty, those days are over. We no longer own and control the message, because the power to communicate is in the palm of everyone's hands. You know, everyone everywhere has found their voice. And we're already seeing the impact of that in mainstream journalism with user-generated content and citizen journalism, but more widely, I think, with the power and influence of social media. What that means for us internally is that I think we have to think a little bit differently now, if not very differently. I think we have to be more humble and interesting to command attention. We can't just rely on our proximity to the leadership team, on our position in the hierarchy, on the fact that we own some print channels and some screen channels. We know, because we've been told over and over again, and we see it, trust and deference, they're all in decline. So if we want people to sit up and take notice of what we're saying, we do need to be interesting, and we do need to be honest. And what we say has to be of some value to the audience, not just to us. So if you like, it almost means a complete sort of swing round the other way and looking at, before you communicate, what does my audience care about? What do they want to hear about? I think in some ways the book does go a little bit further, because if you look at almost every sector of British industry today, you see that everyone is working in a really fiercely competitive marketplace. You might have been in your industry for over 100 years. You might have some kind of mighty presence today, but I guarantee you're not feeling really certain about your future. And that's because, you know, we live in a world where almost every product, almost every service is in danger of being replicated. And most organizations, I think, know this, and that's why, you know, they're in one long, endless, it seems, transformation program. And so the answer to that is probably to get more out of the most costly asset that they've got on their balance sheet, and that's their people. Mm-hmm. And the book takes the view that every employee is a knowledge worker. You know, knowledge workers aren't just people that work in, you know, professional services or those kinds of industry. Anyone who develops a product or service and serves a customer has potentially got interesting knowledge and insight about how your organization operates today and how it could in the future. So in order to survive in this fiercely competitive world, you've got to sustain and maintain, participate in interesting conversations with the people that really know your business inside out, and that's, you know, that's the front line.
That's
so, yes,
your
that's
people.
The kind of, yes, exactly. Mm. So that's the kind of, if you like, the key themes of the book, I'd say.
Okay. And so it's really, I think, one of the, so really less telling and more asking, and giving opportunities to your employees to not to sort of have a voice, but a voice that is truly listened to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say don't listen if you're not prepared to act on the answers, and at least demonstrate that you've listened. That's not to say that every single gripe and concern that the audience raise you can act on and solve, but you must at least demonstrate that you've listened by saying, I hear what you say, and we're going to take that into consideration. Sorry, no, we can't do that because X, Y, Z, or yes, we can because A, B, C. But demonstrate your listening. Don't ask if you don't want to know, because actually that raises these expectations. And it's worse than not asking, actually. To be ignored is worse, I think.
So, I mean, really, that's all about, we link this back to Engage for Success and its four enablers. That's very much playing to the employee voice enabler, isn't it, then?
It is.
And you were talking about... Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, in terms of channels, it's moving from the corporate voice, I guess, to the employee voice. So in terms of the content that we create today, because clearly you're not going to throw your channels out overnight. You're not going to have the money or the time or the budget to overhaul everything overnight. You've got channels in place today, face-to-face, screen, paper. I'd say still use them, but don't pump those bland corporate messages down them. Think about how you can be a little bit more interesting and open and braver, maybe braver. Yeah. We need to be a bit braver with our editorial decisions as well in internal communications. Maybe think about what the audience is paying to read or deciding to follow themselves, and maybe set the bar there, really.
And it's interesting, actually, because, I mean, one of the things we are very much our premise here at Woodread is that we believe that you should treat employees like marketing departments treat customers. And if you think about marketing departments' premises, always to have insight into their audience. You know, what is it that my audience wants to hear? What is the truth that matters to that audience? And what you've identified really is that that hasn't necessarily always been the case when you're engaging with employees. We know that that has always, hasn't necessarily always been the case when you're engaging with employees, and that needs to change, doesn't it, really, Katie?
It's astounding to me that we have many organisations, some of them have tens of thousands and some of them have hundreds of thousands of employees. That's a free force of people that you can ask questions of. That's free market research. I don't know why we don't do more of it. Before we launch an initiative, why we don't ask a question first or a series of questions first. You are right. We would never think of launching a new product or a new service without doing the research, and we'd be paying for that research. Mm-hmm. We've got this army of people on our doorstep that we can ask questions of. We don't often do it, I don't think. Certainly not enough, for sure. And that's where listening is so important, I think.
That was what I was going to come on to. I mean, you've talked about don't ask the questions if you're not prepared to listen to the answers and act on them. But do you think that the audience for your book, are, whether they be the internal comms practitioners or leadership teams, are they used to listening, or do they need to develop a new, do they need to sort of hone their skills a little bit?
Well, I'm always amused when I see, you know, adverts for chief executives, other senior executives, really excellent listening is never sort of top on the list of must-haves in terms of skills and attributes. But we know through just being social animals that when we listen harder, we get to hear more. We learn more through listening. We also know through the work, there's an interesting book written by Susan Cain called Quiet, we also know that when we listen really hard to people, we make them more intelligent. And by that I mean, you know, there's nothing so unnerving that as someone who's not listening properly to you. You stumble over your words, you give up halfway through. When we really listen very hard, we, you know, we make that person say more and open up more. When we spoke to Richard Mullander, I mean, he listened as a hostage negotiator throughout his career with the Army and the FBI and the Metropolitan Police Service. He's had to listen in order to save lives. And so he's got a really interesting take on the power of listening. He told a story of a domestic siege situation. So he was called into a situation where a husband had his wife tied up. He'd poured petrol over her head, and he was threatening to set fire to her because he suspected her of adultery. And Richard had been talking him down for about 2 hours, and eventually, after talking to him, asking him a series of very open questions, non-leading questions, this man said, how would you feel? You get home, this is what you find. You look after your family, you work hard, and this is what you find. And Richard turned round to us and said, what has this man just told me about his values? And we said, well, he's told, you know, he's very frustrated, he's angry, he doesn't feel in control. And Richard said, no, he's told me all those things, but the most important thing he's told me is that this is a man who loves and cares for his family and wants to do the right thing by them. So the next thing Richard said to this man was, I don't want to speak to the man who's got some woman tied up. I want to speak to the man who loves and cares for his family. And that changed the whole dynamic of the conversation. And I was really reminded of this when we develop our corporate values internally. You know, we sit in our ivory towers and we look at the business strategy and we chat to our HR colleagues. We come up with a series of values and then we take them out to the front line and we say, what do these values mean to you? How would you interpret these values in your day-to-day work? How would you bring them to life? And I think we're doing the whole thing round the wrong way. We need to look at the values that exist within our own workforces today, because they do exist, and work with those, because those are the things that really mean something to the audience. So this isn't about soppy, fluffy, nice-to-do things. This is about being more competitive and finding your competitive edge by using your internal resources more intelligently, I think.
Absolutely. Interesting. Very interesting. Well, so any other particular points you want to bring out, Katie, before we perhaps move on to looking at some of the more sort of some practical learnings that came out of the book?
I suppose one of the key enablers would be line managers. I think we do need to support, because we've talked a little bit about the leadership teams and leadership teams needing to listen and ask questions. We know, don't we, how important line managers are. That we've been talking about that for many years. But
sure.
I'm still not convinced we're giving them the tools that they need to have the conversations that really matter on the front line. I don't know if we always realise how difficult those conversations can sometimes be, and I'm not sure we're always equipping our frontline managers as well as we should. And certainly in our research, we see people in those roles feeling very stressed, very overworked, very frustrated because they're getting pressure from above and pressure from below. So I'm wondering whether we can do more to help line managers have the conversations that really are going to drive our businesses forward too.
Yeah. It's interesting that anecdote you told about your hostage negotiator. I mean, even when he asked you guys, who are clearly comms people, what it was that he'd learnt from that guy who was holding his wife hostage, actually you didn't get it. And you needed him to, you know, you needed him to be able to say, no, that wasn't what he was telling us. What he was telling us was that he was a man who really loved and cared for his family. And I wonder how many of us actually are capable of that level of listening and actually really understanding what we're being told, rather than simply thinking we've understood what we're being told. Because those are skills that we need to really hone if we're going to do this properly, aren't they?
I would recommend everyone goes out and buys a book on mindfulness. I know that a lot of people are talking about mindfulness at the moment, but I came across it.
Hang on, you're supposed to be selling your own book, Katie, not someone else's.
Exactly, okay, so I know. Well, I touch on mindfulness in the book, so yes, that would
you
be
do.
A quick
okay.
link to finding out
oh, okay.
more
so
about
if they want,
it.
If they want to find out more about it, they should buy your book first and then look at the references. That'll do, though, won't it?
Chapter two, yes. But you raise such an important point. We aren't good at it. Our internal chatter gets in the way. You'll be surprised how many times we finish someone's sentence. We agree with them too much, we disagree with them too early, and that changes the course of what they were going to say and changes where their sentence ends up. We do need to be better at listening mindfully, which means listening with a very open mind, and not imposing our own value judgments, I guess, on what someone's saying, looking and listening for their values. It takes practice, actually. And Richard Mullander says he practices every day. He says, you don't want to be the checkout girl at Sainsbury's who gets me, because I will get you talking. We need to get people talking so that we can practice those skills, absolutely.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Really interesting. I mean, what a job to do, but it just puts the importance of listening onto a whole new level as far as his role is concerned. But as you say, there's some real lessons that everybody can learn from that and apply them in their work, really. So very interesting. So we're kind of coming towards the end of the show now, Katie. So you've talked about the key themes of the book. You've talked about how we need to, instead of going cascading down from the top in one direction, we need to be engaging in more open conversations and asking and listening to what is being told to us from the bottom up. You've talked about how we need to make the content we put into the channels that we have more engaging by thinking about the audience first. So if there are any, and I know you said at the beginning the book isn't a manual, so I totally get that. But if we were just to sort of close the show by just talking about some examples or ideas that perhaps you could share with some listeners as to how they might take on some of this thinking in their own jobs, is there anything you can suggest, any pointers you'd like to share just to close?
I think some practical things. I think go in tomorrow and take photographs or make notes of every single message that you get from the moment you walk through the door. So the notice that tells you to wear your security pass, the poster on the back of the toilet door, the round robin email, and have a look at the language. If that language came to life and it was a person, would you cross the road to have a conversation with them? Or would actually cross the road to avoid them? I think we need to look at our language and make it interesting and actually kind of resonate with people. I think I guarantee there are people now planning the next initiative or change program. Before you start crafting your messages, how about asking a question of the audience first, a very open question that's going to get people thinking and give you content ideas and direction. I think this is the basic idea. Be realistic, because your organisation's not going to spontaneously burst into conversation. People say, well, why is no one commenting on my CEO's blog? How many blogs is he commenting on? You know, get him to something.
And how many blogs actually are written? How many CEO blogs are actually written by their CEO and by the CEO anyway? Being devil's advocate there. Yeah.
Yes. But, I mean, social is not a tool. It's a behaviour. So, you know, he or she needs to be social. In the room, in the elevator, online, you know, that's gonna help enormously. Mm-hmm. And I'd say my final plea is that communications gets put on the agenda at every single important meeting. So before people leave the room, they've decided amongst themselves, what are we going to start asking questions about today, tomorrow, this week? What are we all going to be talking about? So often communications is happening. Millions of conversations are happening every day inside your organisations, but are they the right ones? So that might be a way of just making sure that communications is actually on the agenda and it gets discussed at the end of every important meeting, so people know where they stand and what they should be listening out for, asking questions about, and ultimately talking about, I guess.
Yeah, so by conversation, of course, you mean a proper, true conversation in the sense that somebody asks, somebody responds, somebody listens to that response, somebody responds to that response in some way, rather than a conversation which is basically a sort of talking at people and a kind of just a kind of constant outflow of noise. So it's conversation in the proper sense, isn't it?
Conversation where people forget where they stand in the hierarchy, where they forget where they stand within terms of their sort of business division, or, you know, these are conversations that happen between people, and that's the most important thing, that they're true and they're meaningful. We use this word authentic a lot, which personally I'm hearing too much of, but genuine conversations. And as I said, they're not necessarily easy to have, because for whatever reason, we put bureaucracy, we put channels in the way, we put process in the way.
I was going to say it's about people. Yeah, it's about people rather than process, isn't it, really?
Yes, yes. It's about finding ways for people to connect, I guess, and share what they know.
In genuine social ways. Great stuff. Katie, that's been a fabulous half hour. As always, it's whizzed by, but it's particularly whizzed by this afternoon. So thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoyed hearing all about your book. And I'm sure that From Cascade to Conversation is easily findable for those who'd like to explore it and learn more about it. And thank you very much for being on the show this afternoon.
Thank you very
much.
I'll say goodbye
now.
I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.